Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention? We're on the eve of destruction. And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
Finally, really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
Absolutely, I think we're going to make it. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, and welcome to the program. John Warren with Mike Parker. And, well, I don't know what's going on, the train or whatever, but every day is a new day for getting caught. So let me tell you what we have on the lineup today. Jordan Kent is going to join us at 11:30 this morning. This guy has, I mean, he's done it all in sports. Three-sport athlete. He has the football call when the Beavers go to Air Force this Saturday. And so we're going to talk to Jordan Kent about that, Beaver football, all that good stuff. And then at 12:05, where's the 12:30? 12:30, I wrote it down. Ann Schatz, Running Ann Schatz, is going to join us. I think Mike and I are the only two left who call her Running Ann Schatz. What a fantastic human being she is. And we love talking with Running Ann Schatz. She actually had the call last Friday, of the doubleheader. Or was it Monday? Tuesday. It was Tuesday. I'm losing track of days. Of both the women's game and the men's game, both blowouts, and along with Mary Murphy. So, and they were tremendous. So Ann Schatz will join us at 12:30. In and around all of that, your phone calls, your texts, the text line, of course, brought to you by University Honda, 541-926-8628. And the Downward Dog phone line is 541-926-8628. So I have someone here in studio talking to that thing right there. Say hi. Say it again. Say it again. There you go. Listen to those sultry tones. This is Paul. Paul is one of my lifelong best friends, and is Paul struggles with loyalty to teams. He went to New Mexico, big time Lobo, and pull that up. And feel free to comment if you need. And then he moves to Dallas and is all into was it TCU at the time. In fact, when the Beavers played in Jerry's World, I stayed with Paul and Suzanne, and we had a great time, went to Plano and saw a high school game, but he was all about that. And then they moved to Salt Lake, and Paul is just a big Utah fan. Is that hard to let go of teams and just that a new one is your favorite team?
Well, you always have your
favorite. Paul is a Beaver through and through. Yes. Paul, meet Mike. Mike, this is Paul.
Hey, Paul. Good morning.
Paul is on his way to Bandon Dunes to go golfing, and I don't see him very often. We're lifelong best friends, and he stopped by to say hello.
Yeah. Hey, Paul.
So Paul is an ardent Rams fan, mm-hmm. And I even saw you on the big screen while watching a Rams game.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And Paul's dad, Dean, grew up in Albany, went to Albany High School, and then... when we first started the Joe Beaver Show, he was a big-time listener and would chime in. Anyway, it's great to see you and have you here, even for as brief as it is, because I know you have to get going. But it's like, oh, hi, best friend. See you. Goodbye. I have responsibilities here. But no, Paul is a Beaver, and Mike, Paul's brother, Steve, is my brother's age, your age. And Steve did what we all kind of think about sometimes. Remember, he loved Alabama football, or did he love it, or did he was just curious because it was so big? Okay, so this is in the 70s. He goes, he's down here in Sigma Chi, right, at Oregon State. Mm-hmm. But one year, he says, I'm going to go to Alabama just because I want to see what it's like because of football and sports.
So he got into the portal and ended up in Tuscaloosa? So
he portaled down to Tuscaloosa, stayed there. Was it the year or just a term?
Okay, a little like Chad Johnson going for a football season.
And then
like Jam Griffin coming back from Oregon State, going south and coming home.
I remember these things.
That's a good memory. Steve-o.
Well, hey, yeah, good job. And I'm going to turn your microphone off now.
No, thanks. And I'll be listening
nice to meet you, Paul. Good luck. Good luck at Bandon Dunes.
I wish we had more time. It kills me. It breaks my heart.
John, if you want to go with him, I can just take him.
No. Last time I went with him to Bandon Dunes, I actually shot pretty well. Remember, I had that little girl caddy, and she told me what to do on every shot. It was pretty good.
So the credit goes to her.
That's right.
Have a good one, Paul.
See you, Paul.
Thank you. So you were genuinely surprised by this guy walking in front of you and into the
sort
booth?
Of. He texted me about an hour ago and said, "What's the studio's address?"
Okay,
that was a surprise.
Right. You don't ask that question out of the blue.
And then I had forgotten about it. And Nina came in and said, there's a Paul out here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And he came in literally as the music was playing.
Nice. As Christopher Cross was fading out and you were bringing your mic up to
and
tell.
And I haven't seen Paul in at least a year, maybe two.
Good. I'm glad. It's a kindness and a goodness
but
that
he is
stops
a
by.
Beaver through and through. And his dad, Dino was big time. Dean was that legendary.
He's
passed a number of years ago. But Dean was that legendary Little League coach in the neighborhood does it for years. No, it was up in Lake Grove.
Oh, in Lake Grove up there, but then he ended up down here.
Oh, yeah. His mom still lived here, and he retired and came down here to live out his final years. But he did go to Albany High School. I don't know how old Dean was, probably my dad's age, 88, 89, if you were still with us today, but Albany High School, big time Beaver. And, he used to listen to the show. You have friends where there's one parent in the friend group that you kind of bond with. And Dean and I were pretty tight, you know, for friend of a father of a friend and love sports, love Beaver sports.
Well, it was a pleasant surprise and nice to meet a good friend of yours, John, and nice to thank you for covering until I arrived. We have I see a phone ringing even now. We do have open phones between now and Jordan Kent. Jordan will be on the call, as John mentioned, for CBS Sports Network this Saturday at Falcon Stadium. Jordan, as John said, is an incredibly talented person. Both as a student athlete playing three sports, involved in three sports at Oregon. The problem with saying playing when it comes to track and field.
Yeah,
I mean, he played football and basketball and competed in track at Oregon, three sports star, and has gone on to become a multi-level star in the sports casting profession. His resume, I'm not sure it's quite as long as that of J.B. Long's, but what he's done, what he's doing now is phenomenal. And you, and putting together in your notes, John, that not only a three-sport letterman at Oregon, a sixth-round pick of the Seahawks, parts of four seasons in the NFL, and the play-by-play broadcaster for the NBA 2K League, Super Smash Bros., and League of Legends. Now, in saying Super Smash Bros. And League of Legends, I say things that I've heard. I've never participated in I've never played a video game other than Pong or whatever it's called, the original one. I've never played any other video game in my life. So indeed, I'm out of it.
Not
I'm
even
out of
Pong?
Touch. I played that, yes, in the mid-70s. But no, but go ahead and ask. And
Asteroids.
The answer will be no. No.
Pac-Man.
And no. Never. No, and not out of, I'm never playing Pac-Man. A man has to draw the line somewhere in life. No, it's not it. It's just, Never occurred to me, never came up. I'm kind of one of these tweener guys between the computer age,
but let me ask
video
you this.
Games age.
Let me ask you this. It wasn't out of being too cool because all it was about stick and ball.
No.
It wasn't just, that.
No, heck not.
Okay.
Heck
I don't think
not
so.
Not out of, no, I have to draw the line.
Yeah,
I have certain standards in my existence. No, it had nothing to do with that. But when I see Super Smash Bros. And League of Legends,
oh,
those
yeah.
are things I've heard of.
Well,
and Jordan Kent's a play-by-play guy for them.
I've never played them either.
Okay.
I do play some modern games, or have, let's just say, but those I've never played.
Now, is that the world that our friend got thrown off the TV show works
yeah,
in?
I think Jerome
Cooney.
Is he? Because when
I mean,
they
is that
would,
what he does?
When they would show him, they list what you do, and it said, esports announcer.
Commentator.
Yeah, commentator.
Okay.
So it's got to be.
Now that is that show still going? Can we talk to Rome about his experience?
The show's still going, yeah.
So we can't until it's over?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Did you see the shows?
No.
Cedric, I love you, Cedric.
Cedric, we love you. Great.
Jerome was just saying, I got this thing in the bag. I'm in control.
Do you think it was
kind of
a performative act because he's a nice kid?
Oh, yeah, it's
but you're
be.
Saying he didn't come across as, quote-unquote, this nice kid on that show?
Well, very nice. Just
really confident.
Like, over the top. I mean, they're being individually interviewed, and he's like, oh, yeah, no, this is on the episode. Now, editing is 90% of it. But on the episode where he was eliminated, he's like, oh, yeah, no, I got this in the bag. I'm running the show. After they show him working by talking to other people, saying, let's get so-and-so out and all this, and then it's time to go.
So you're saying, though, all of that, however nice and gentle he may have been in that presentation, cocky though he may have been, he was not a well-liked figure because
of
that.
No, they all hated him.
Okay.
They all hated him.
Well, that, to me, strikes me as the performative part of it, the shtick part of it, a little like in the Rocky III, Hulk and Sly, Rocky going through their whole exhibition and Hulk hating him. And then, hey, you almost really did hurt me. We're going to get together next week for that event or whatever. I mean, that's what, to me, what Rome Cooney's up to, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I can't wait to get him on because we can find out how much of that is shtick and how much they knew that he was that confident.
He's a nice kid. I mean, the kid I knew years ago. A very nice, sweet kid.
Of course.
I mean, I assume that still exists in him.
And he did it with a smile on his face.
But you're
just
saying the cockiness.
Confident.
Okay. And that doesn't always
hit well
with people.
Not when you're competing against someone,
Okay. Jordan Kent at 11:30 and running Ann.
Yeah.
Ann, don't go running to him. Running Ann shots at 12:30.
You and I might be holdouts on that.
Yeah, I really look forward to talking to her again about her career, 40-year-plus career now. Fascinating career. And she was the one. We've talked a little bit about it, but I want to do it again. Because the film vaulted Tonya Harding into even more, in a sense, popularity and people being aware of the story. That was something we lived through in 94.
Yeah.
But a lot of, our kids weren't born then, but they have watched I, Tonya with Margot Robbie. And I say, I covered that. Yours truly is in the final image of the film.
Really?
Yes, I'm in the final image. Me, the
is
real.
Is it a pool?
It's a pool of reporters following Tonya coming down the concourse at PDX. Ann Schatz, I think, is in it. Others are in it. Other, people working in the media at Portland at the time, and I'm kind of trailing behind Shane Stant and Galooly or whoever the entourage was, trying to get my microphone around to get in front of Tonya to see if she had any comment about it. And I promise you, you can order up I, Tonya right now and scroll through to the end. And the final image of the film, when I watched it with my family, I said, oh, my gosh.
There I am.
As the film fades out, there's me standing behind Tonya, full head of hair. Oh, not a full head, but almost, and very black hair.
Black hair, yeah.
And they couldn't, Dad, that's not really, that is me. As the image fades, that was such a ridiculous, crazy story. But Ann Schatz was the first person to get Tonya on the record in that whole wild story. And she'll talk. We can talk to her a little bit about that. We can talk to her a little bit about, of course, soccer and men's and women's hoops. She called both games this past Tuesday. She's a good friend of the show. It's been a long time since we've been able to connect with her. So we'll visit with Jordan Kent and then Ann Schatz. But we have the pleasure of going to the Downward Dog phone lines with a couple of good friends to the show. We appreciate their contributions always. Tumwater first, then we'll head down to Oak Ridge and visit with Spence. Let's go with Dave first. Dave, thank you for the call, and welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, fellas. It's been a while since I've called in with a realignment update.
Oh, good, so, good.
If you're not otherwise aware, or the listeners to the big audience of the Joe Beaver Show, as that station break had.
Uh-oh.
We lost it.
Somebody, the powers that be, don't want this information out there, evidently.
Boy, that cut, too. That didn't fade. That cut.
And when you were talking to him earlier, so let's release him and go to Spence. And, Dave, we lost you. He might even be holding forth now about what Dellinger or somebody said. But, Dave, please call us back because we lost the connection with you. Call us back, and you had me on alert.
I know.
Okay, what do you got?
Yeah.
Dave, please call us back. In the meantime, let's go to Spencer in Oak Ridge. Spencer, good morning.
Hey, guys. Hope you guys are doing well. Hey, just thinking about San Jose State and the fallout from that and just watching the reaction on social media, it seems like we're at that point, and as Beaver fans, we've all been at this point where we start throwing blame on people and trying to, okay, well, this coordinator has to go and this coach has to go. But here's where I get stuck on that and kind of take pause is, and you think back to last year, I'm excited to hear your guys' take on this. Like when everything went down last year and our football team was decimated, we had no conference we were looking for. We had a direction, but everything was unknown at that point, it seemed like. And then you bring in Kyle and NIL, and that was, you know, it was interesting to watch him put together what he was able to put together, although we don't know specifics. And he was able to, you know, from an NIL standpoint, like, certainly put together a team, we'll say. What we don't know about this year, and this is why I have so much hope, is we don't know the chest that Kyle is working with this year. And we have so much more going for us this year with a solid coach, with a conference that we know we're going into. There's so many more knowns this year. And I'm curious on your take, like how, because it'll be interesting to watch after the Boise State game, what happens in the portal and who we get, who we lose and that sort of thing. So, I mean, what do you guys think? Like, because we don't know exactly what Kyle's working with, like, how do you guys respond to that take? Like,
well,
'cause I feel...
Go ahead. You feel what?
No, I feel like we could be in for a really exciting December, to be honest.
Yeah, we could indeed be. But the unknown is so large in terms of what that world that you allude to with Kyle looks like, what he's been able to generate in, through the generosity of donors and so on. I mean, I don't know. What, you know, what in a sense that payroll's got to be. I heard somebody on a national show threw it out there glibly, like this is a known fact, Spencer, something about, well, Dion, if he jumps to the NFL, has got to deal with this, his salary cap and all. And then the guy said, and of course, the salary cap is coming for nil soon in college football. Just like, yeah, of course, and we all know that. Have you? I mean, do we know that, Spencer? It's certainly not going to be in time for this December, but some level of cap or a guard or it makes some sense somehow, some way, and it certainly would be helpful to Oregon State, Washington State, Iowa State, other programs in the world to have some sort of cap, as it were, don't you think? We're not there yet, so I don't know what Kyle's going to do in December. It is a key and critical question. Your basic point, Spencer, is it's too early to be saying that guy's got to go, this guy's got to. I mean, I'm totally with you on that, and I hope Beaver Nation is too this season. And I thought Mike Riley laid it out pretty well yesterday in our conversation about what Trent and all of the coaches and the entire program has sort of been up against. And I think we all need to kind of pull back, withhold some judgment, and wait and see how things are going forward.
For sure, for sure.
Have you heard anything about a cap coming? I mean, is that just, you know, an idle rumor, or is there somebody saying, yes, there is one coming?
I've not heard anything, but I would certainly support that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I do too.
Especially right now, since there's a $10.5 million for 4 years being offered up for this Michigan.
The transfer?
The transfer from LSU.
Oh, the supposed.
Supposed.
Yeah.
Trying to get him.
Yeah. Trying to get him. And
$10.5 million.
All the tampering that's going on.
For a 17-year-old, 18-year-old who hasn't done anything yet.
Thank you for the call, Spencer. Good stuff. And we'll talk to Kyle soon, maybe, and see kind of what he's free to share about what's going on in his world. Thanks for the good words, Spencer. Good to hear from you. Let's go back to Tumwater and hope our connection has improved, because, Dave, you certainly teased us with realignment stuff. We're always interested. I hope the connection holds. What do you got?
Can you hear me now?
That's
Mike?
Better. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So the Pac-12 ADs, presidents, and their consultant Octagon are meeting today or tonight to go over the media deal, and of course the possible addition of new schools, which aren't projected to be identified until the springtime, which John Canzano had already indicated separately. It seems like the CW and Turner are in the mix, as well as the usual suspects. The idea, they're looking for 9 football schools, not just the 8, so they can have a 20-game round-robin basketball schedule with a different media deal for basketball than football. In other words, there'll be 2 deals out there. So that's what's new out there in the media contract and realignment relative to the Pac-12.
Now, Dave, if you don't mind, when you say, did that come from like Dellinger, Yahoo? I mean, are you willing or able to say kind of where you're hearing that from? Because I hadn't seen that yet.
Well, I am a researcher.
I know.
I did find it. The fellows, there's a podcast down in San Diego. They had J.D. Ricker, who's the AD down there, on yesterday, and he said that the conference the commissioner, along with the ADs and presidents, is meeting tomorrow. I just inferred that's today, the 14th, I think it is. So that's my source.
Okay, that's
Milner
interesting.
Also has a, does that help?
Yeah.
Build credibility, Mike.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And, you know, when you say they're going to wait till the spring, I thought when Sarah was teasing us something next week, I thought, and we've got the president and AD from the, you know, from Memphis here. Welcome to the Pac-12, you know, some sort of wave to the crowd out on the field. I don't think it's going to quite be along those lines. We're still waiting to see what that entails. David, it's great talking to you. Thank you for the information. Anything else?
I got a couple other tidbits, though, Mike, if I might quickly.
Yes.
Wilner has a hilarious comment out there how the 10 departing schools thought they were going to see better refereeing in football when they went to the new conference.
That's
and
good.
And they're entirely disappointed. It's bad everywhere.
That's good. I got to read that, too. Anything else, Dave?
Lastly, I did not know, but Teresa Gould's husband is the running backs coach for the Los Angeles Rams. Did you know that, gentlemen?
No, I did not
know that.
I think it may have come up in our research, but it hasn't come up in conversation, but we will explore. It's not Ron Gould, is it?
Yes, it is Ron Gould.
It is Ron Gould.
Former head coach at UC Davis, which is why UC Davis, every once in a while, cycles through the dialogue speculation about maybe an 8th or 9th school in the revamped Pac-12.
Interesting.
That's
yeah.
The report from Tumwater today.
Thank you, Dave. And
he was,
Ron,
wasn't
Ron
an
played,
assistant in the league here, or did yeah, he play down the road?
Yeah, I think he played at Oregon. Yeah, I do think he did. Let's get to Mike in Seattle via Arizona. It's got to be quick, Mike. We have Jordan Kent around the corner. Mike, good morning.
Okay, I called to give a pep talk yesterday.
Yes.
But today I'm calling to say there's never ever going to be a cap on NIL. People who think that's going to happen, you know, they're spitting in the wind. The only governing body that can legislate that is the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the NCAA.
Right.
They are now impotent. They control nothing.
Right.
The only other way is for the presidents who are also impotent because they have said, yeah, we'll go to the Big Ten. All the presidents would have to get together and say, you know, we're going to cap it at this number, but then it's going to go back to the courts at some time.
Right.
And the Supreme Court has already ruled that, you know, we can't artificially restrict.
Yes.
You know, the right to make 11.
Yeah.
So why do we think it's wrong for a quarterback to get $8 million?
John? No, nobody thinks it's wrong per se. No, I don't think anyone is saying necessarily that it's wrong, but that it's not sustainable, or that it also just prices out a lot of institutions.
But then the market, you know, will correct itself. Naturally, the markets correct themselves. As long as people give at the schools that have big donors, they're going to keep giving. The presidents are going to keep taking it. The ADs are going to say, yes, sir. And the players are going to get the money.
Yeah.
And pay tax on it. I believe, and this is just my, we have to get over that some natural order is going to say, oh, this is stupid. We got to put the toothpaste back in the tube, you know, which I hope could happen. But the stronger are going to get stronger and the weak are going to die off and go do something else. But how do you feel about it? I mean, am I on the right track?
Mike, I think you're right. And so that's why I hesitated when I heard somebody say the other day on a national show, well, the cap's coming. Well, I hadn't heard anything about that. And the reason we haven't is because you're saying it ain't happening and it can't happen based on what the courts have already said.
Well,
so therefore, though, it does make me nervous about our future if there isn't some sort of something that happens to, and I don't know what that is, but it's not sustainable here or in a lot of places.
Right. Most places.
Right. So, in the NFL that has a cap, and that's what we talk about, the people who agree to do that are the owners of the franchises.
Right.
In basketball, it's the owners of the franchises.
Right.
And
baseball,
And the player associations, you know, that are unionized, they don't fight it because they've agreed to it in a collective bargaining.
Right.
So
right.
When we talk about employees at a football, at a college level, that may be the only way to get to a point where it stops. But it's not going to happen in my lifetime. I'll guarantee you right now. I don't see it. But then you get Alan Theron and ask a pointed question. Everything's negotiable, right? And that's the American way. And I think we just have to come to grips with it and say, how are we going to go forward? And back to Spencer, and I like Kyle a lot, and I think he's doing a great job. He's not telling us the details because it could be the details aren't very good.
Well,
if they were great, they'd be telling us. And I think Rob Mullins was on with Gonzano yesterday and flat said, we need $20 million more or things are getting cut. Baseball,
Mike, we have to go. Oh, we're late on our guests. Thank you. We'll be a quick break. Come back with Jordan Kent on the Joe Beaver Show. You know, it's top of mind, and even though our next guest can speak on so many things, and one of the more versatile, talented broadcasters in the country, and it's an honor to have him on the show, I know it's difficult to track him down because we play phone tag a lot, but here he is, Jordan Kent, who will be the play-by-play announcer for the Beavers game against Air Force at Falcon Stadium on Saturday. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to talking about the game. But, Jordan, I kind of want to we just had back-to-back calls on our local show asking about nil, and somebody say, you know, I heard a national say, well, there's a cap coming to all of that to bring some sanity to it, and a caller immediately. And I wasn't saying there was. I heard a national person say it. A caller then followed that and said, there ain't going to be a cap. The courts have already ruled. There's no limit on name, image, and likeness for players. Rob Mullins reportedly went on Canzano and said, we need another $20 million for our purposes at Oregon. And, Jordan, I'm hearing all of this and just feel like I'm kind of on a wild ride and don't know when and if it's ever going to stop. So before we even get to the particulars of Air Force and the Beavers Saturday afternoon that you're calling, when you think about all of this that I just touched on, what occurs to you?
Well, I think it's an evolving landscape. And first of all, just thanks again for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Always great to hear your voice here, Mike. And it has changed so quickly since 2019, 2020, when now you added the extra year for players, the transfer portal, NIL. So much came so quickly. It was similar to trying to wrangle five or six wild stallions all at once. It's just hard to do. You kind of have to deal with each thing one at a time. And then you have the settlement coming in that says schools have now got to share the revenue with student athletes. And how's that going to impact the bottom line? And so there's a lot of conversations about what's going to happen going on out there. And we don't know what's going to actually come to fruition. But I will say this. We had a call with CBS yesterday to get set for the college basketball season, and we had the NCAA head, Charlie Baker, on the call. And I think the thing you can anticipate happening for sure in the next couple of years is that when the revenue sharing begins, yes, it's going to be around the $20 million mark that schools are going to have to share and distribute with student-athletes. The way that's distributed hasn't been clearly defined yet. But it's also going to impact a couple of other things in regard to scholarship limits will change specifically for a sport like baseball. This is an example that Charlie said. Historically, only received about 11.5 to 14 scholarships for the 25 to 30 players. You can now increase the number of scholarships you give up to the number of players that you have on the roster for a lot of these sports. So it's going to change things quite a bit as far as the way that rosters are built in different sports. But to your point, there's going to be ways that universities and institutions are going to have to make up this money, and you're going to see it be done in creative ways, whether it is that NIL group that's going to be giving some money back to the school. We've seen in Tennessee, they've already done a talent fee on top of any ticket you pay for, just letting the fans know, listen, if you want to watch good players play, it costs money to get them in here. You're going to have to pay a little bit more per ticket so we can put that money aside to pay for these players. But I think there needs to certainly be some more structure coming in place, because right now it's a bit of the Wild West and there's no clear path for what a school should do and needs to do. Everyone's just trying to get a one leg up advantage. And, you know, that clashes with the pageantry and the history that we're so accustomed to in collegiate sports. So I think there's a way to find a happy medium where you're taking care of these players. They're obviously getting the money they deserve, but at the same time, we are preserving what makes college sports so unique and different from professional sports.
And Jordan, thank you for touching on that. I know we weren't planning per se on it, but here we go to Colorado Springs and the Air Force Academy. As I've prepared my charts for the game, it's the first time I haven't written transferred in from so-and-so. Spent 2 years here, transferred. Yeah, you talk about a different kind of world, right?
It really is. We had Army earlier this year, and it was about their second game of the year, and so we didn't really quite know how good Army was going to be this year. And when we saw them in person and met with their coaching staff, we immediately felt, the service academies have a huge advantage in this world right now, in the sense of they're going to keep their kids and retain their rosters and have that maturity and have that depth and have that chemistry. And if you time it right with the right players at the correct positions, then you get something magical happening like you're seeing with Army and like you're seeing with Navy. And consistency is going to be a privilege at this point for a lot of schools, because it's just so difficult to keep 70 to 80% of your roster intact year after year. And those service academies, obviously, they're unique institutions, and kids aren't going there for the NIL, and they aren't going there for other reasons. They're going there to serve their country. And that's going to be very valuable for them in this ever-evolving world where it's so hard for coaches just to retain so much of their roster.
Jordan Kent, our guest, will be on the call on CBS Sports Network Saturday from Colorado Springs with Logan Ryan and Tina Cervasio, CBS Sports Network. And you mentioned Army and the Naval Academy, but Air Force has been right in that, too. They're in a bit of a transition year. They're coming off a big win, and that makes me nervous for the Beavs. But 40-12, Jordan, over the previous four full seasons prior to that. So Troy Calhoun has been also benefiting with the continuity and the systems that they all understand and commit to there. This is a little bit of an anomaly, but they've been really good, too, right?
They have over the years. This is certainly a rebuilding year for them, though not as good as they were last year. They were ranked up until the final 2 weeks of the season. They dropped a game at home against Army and then ran into some issues later on in the non-conference matchup, I think, to close up the game. I can't remember what it was. But what's unique about this game is that both Oregon State and Air Force are top five in the country in time of possession. So this is going to be one of those games where instead of getting 11 and 12 possessions, you might only get 6, 7, or 8. And what Air Force has kind of figured out over the last couple of weeks is how to play a little bit better defense. They held Fresno State to negative rushing yards last week. And so they're starting to kind of put it together, and they're always going to have a really good home crowd. And I think the challenge with them is, with every possession being so precious, you have to get touchdowns. You can't settle for field goals. And unfortunately, that's been the issue for Oregon State, right? They can move the ball very well within the 20-yard line to the other 20-yard line. It's just finishing drives and getting touchdowns and capping them off, which you're going to have to do against Air Force because those possessions are so precious throughout the game.
Jordan, how much have you, I know you're the executive producer of a show I work on, so you pay attention to everything. You work on Talking Ducks, I work on Talking Beavers, we got Talking Cougars, we got Talking Huskies, and you have you somehow found a way to produce and be the CEO over all these shows, and we appreciate that. So when you're paying attention when you can, and I know you do, to the Beavers, you've touched on a big part of it, the troubles in the red zone lately. What do you make of the big picture stuff, being at 4-5 and everything that's hit the program, coaching staff upheaval, transfer portal, attrition, et cetera, injuries like crazy? How do you see the Beavers right now? What would you say to Beaver Nation about, I guess, this game, yes, but the future in sort of a bigger picture look?
I'm sure they would love the opinion from a former Duck, right?
Sure.
I'm very happy, first of all, to see what Oregon State and Washington State accomplished this year. I think all of us here agree we love and miss the Pac-12 very dearly and hate to have seen what happened last year and feel like the Pac-12 was something very special. And so anybody that is able to still reestablish that, we're rooting for, right? And so with Oregon State, to do what they did this quickly, to be in limbo, it's not like a current situation where you know what conference you're in and, oh, your coach leaves for another gig. At least you know what your team is doing. You had no idea what conference you're going to be in, what was going to happen with the Pac-12, what teams you're going to bring in eventually. For them to pivot as quickly as they did and to build this coaching staff and to construct this roster and to come out the gate 4-1 is a huge testament, really, to the commitment from the university, from the fan base, from really this coaching staff of getting these kids motivated. Now, it's a young team, of course, and you've got a lot of homegrown talent as well, and so you're going to have some ups and downs there. And then once you saw the injury to Griffin, I don't know if that's a one-to-one correlation, but the team's 0-4 since then. And there have been three close losses in those four losses outside of Cal, right? And you just don't know if having one more ace in your deck when you're in the red zone, when you're needing to convert one critical play, is going to get you over the hump in those games. And you look back at the San Jose State game last week, and, you know, it's a tough matchup against the nation's leading receiver. They're going to just throw them slot fades all day long. You're trying to defend those one-on-one actions. You have some great drives, but then two turnovers in the red zone. And to me, when you look at this year for Oregon State, the value of a bowl game is not so much just getting a chance to play one more game, but I think it's all the practices, Mike. Mm-hmm. And you're getting practices with guys that know and understand the entire playbook. They've been doing it all year long, so you can really just refine a lot more. And I can say, as a player, in my second year of football ever, those bowl practices were some of the best practices of my life. And getting that experience for these younger guys is critical. So trying to get two wins here down the stretch, and I know it's not the easiest route, these final three games, right? It's a tough draw. But to me, I think even if Oregon State doesn't get to a bowl game, you still have to crown this season as a success. And now you've got a clear path moving forward. You've got your coaching staff. You know what your conference is going to look like. You've got a ton of talent in the backfield. It's just figuring out the quarterback piece, adding a few more spots on defense. So to me, there's a lot of schools that if they were in the same situation would have really struggled. And to be sitting here, yes, the four-game losing streak is disappointing. You love to pick up one or two more of those wins to get bowl eligible potentially. You have to be pleased with how quickly they're able to continue to kind of get the water out the boat and stabilize this year.
John Warren with Mike Parker. We have Jordan Kent joining us here on the Joe Beaver Show. Jordan, I want to ask you a specific question about this game and about defending this kind of offense. I posed the question to Trent Bray. I played back in the day, in high school. I understand the concepts of defense, but can one not put virtually everybody at least close to the box and then spy the quarterback and spy each of the two running backs to shut down a running game like this? I mean, yeah, they only threw six times last week, so why can't one do that?
It's interesting. We've talked to a couple of coordinators, right, that have had to defend this year. If you go back to the Army game, we've heard a coordinator say, and I don't want to say necessarily what we heard from the Oregon State coordinators just to protect their game plan, right, coming into this game, but you've got to defend this like cover zero and just everybody sell out, and you're going to have three guys that are responsible for the dive, the keep, and the pitch, and you have to remember that assignment, and it's kind of like just avoiding being lulled to sleep throughout the game. You've got the same assignment four times. Can you be consistent? Can you get that check plus on film of knowing your job and doing your job, but then not fall asleep those five or six times they pass it, and then they pop it over your head when you're not paying attention? And that's what you need to do. And I think a lot of teams have been trying to commit to the box and trying to bring that extra defender down there, and they can get some success when they can really plug up everything in the middle and stretch that pitch option to the outside and try to get numbers on the outside. You only do that by bringing that extra defender in. But those couple of times they pass it, and we've seen this with Army, if you aren't there, they're going to go 5 of 8 with 2 touchdowns because you're just asleep, and it's like beating a cover zero blitz. And so if you can trust your secondary and you've got experience back there on guys that can quickly recognize when it is passed and can recover and not get beat from over-the-top throws, then that's the way that you have to play it. And you have to get them into obvious passing situations on third down, which means you've got to win first and second down whenever you can. And so it's a chess match. And teams talk about having to take months to prepare for this. Where, okay, we do a little bit of it in the spring, we do a little bit in fall camp, and then we ramp it up when we get there. And it's just, it's one of those offenses that it's so different than everything else you've seen all year.
Now, I've seen variations of this offense where there's no splits. Literally, everybody is just, it's almost like kicking a field goal. They're that tight. Does it benefit them to be split out, even though they're going to be doing some traps and some inside runs?
I think you have to, because you have to give the illusion of pass, even though you're doing it 6 to 8 times per game. You just have to make people respect it, right? And oftentimes you just have to create some lanes to try and get to the second level as well, too. If you muddle everything up, all it takes is just the defense to be pretty disciplined on the edge to shut a lot of stuff down. But if you can spread everybody out, then you can kind of find a few more mismatches. And plus, it gives you a chance to see where the weak part of the defense is as well, too. And so, I'm just as interested as you. A lot of times you can tell the way this game's going to go in the second or third snap of the game for the most part, and whether or not a team's going to struggle with this triple option or if they're going to be able to have a handle on it.
Last couple of things with Jordan Kent. You talked about the Beavers trying to get to a bowl game, but even if they don't, if they come up a little short of that, you're still saying, given everything, you would pronounce the season successful in a lot of ways, and part of that would be even how quickly the pivot has gone to a rebuild of the Pac-12 as a plan forward. What do you make of the teams that have been invited in thus far, Jordan, in San Diego State, Boise State, Utah State, Fresno State, Colorado State, joining Washington State and Oregon State, Gonzaga and Hoops? What do you make of that grouping in terms of its attractability in a media market rights deal and Gonzaga and Hoops and what may be coming next in expansion?
I think it's wise that they're thinking beyond just football, because those are wonderful basketball schools as well, too. People have to remember the Mountain West has gotten four teams in the tournament the last 2 to 3 years in a row. And those are dollars that go to your conference very much. And so I think it's very wise for them not to go the full football route like we've seen a lot of these conferences do, but to say, listen, this is one of the better basketball conferences. Let's try and take some of those top teams there and get them in.
And Jordan, the last thing then, and that is, have you been to Falcon Stadium ever? Have you called games there?
I have not. And this is the first ever matchup between Oregon State and Air Force. I'm pretty excited. I've been to the Naval Academy and called a game there last year. Now, obviously, we got Falcon Stadium. All that's left is Army, and I'll hit the trifecta.
Hey, your dad, it was great to see Ernie, and he called the Weber State Oregon State game. I lied about that. Yeah, it was great to see him. He kind of brought me up to speed on all the things you're involved with. Let's close with a thought about what else you're involved with and doing. I'm interested to know how you do it all, because you're traveling in basketball, you're doing football, you're all over the country. Are you still doing your Just Kids skills camps? Is that still a big part of your world?
Yeah, it is. We actually have camps in Corvallis every summer. We do a multi-sport camp, a pickleball camp, and a baseball camp, along with 55 other camps across the West, so that's great. And then, you know, obviously just climbing the ladder at CBS and being a busy dad. Speaking of which, I'm actually parked next to my wife. I've got to run one of my sons into the doctor's office right now.
You better do it. Okay.
So
hey, Jordan.
That's the busy schedule goes.
Thank you for your time and making time for us. We'll see you Saturday in Colorado Springs. Thanks, Jordan, for joining the show.
As always, safe travels, guys.
Thank you. Jordan Kent. A doctor's appointment with his child. He's an incredibly talented person, no question.
Oh, yeah, he's doing it all. If we had time, we'll get him on again. Yeah. I want to ask him about the voiceover work on the...
Oh, we didn't even get to Super Smash Bros.
Super Smash Bros.
We'll try again. He's tough to get a hold of, though. I know that. I am tangentially working for him because he is the CEO over all these TV shows, and we... Sometimes it takes days, the beginning of a textual thread. Days later, we finally will either speak or make contact via text. So just to get him for a few minutes was nice. But he's got his hand in a lot of different things, and he is a true young talent doing a lot of different stuff in the world, the ex-esports stuff and the play-by-play football and basketball studio stuff. He worked for the Blazers for years on Comcast Sportsnet Northwest. Good young man.
He's a busy guy. Yeah. Now, before we go to break, I just was thinking, he said Navy Air Force, and I thought, man, that must have been like a half hour long, you know, keeping it on the ground. But it wasn't. It was 3 hours. That's shorter than...
It is shorter than most.
It is, but I think the reason why it wasn't in the 2.5 hour range is because it was a 34-7 score. So 41 points, you know, that many times stopping the clock, going to commercial. Otherwise, those games just rip along when they're all... Just all they're doing is running every single time.
Right, and think about the days, too, as we break and wrap up hour number one. Open phones to open the second hour and shots at 12:30. Major League Baseball games, you see times of game, hour 34. You know, Grover Cleveland-Alexander once threw a nine-inning shutout. The other guy was quick, too, in 59 minutes, 57 minutes, a nine-inning game. It was not like... The clock starts and we got 2 minutes. Guys would just run out on the field, throw their warm-up pitchers, whatever. Yeah, let's go. I mean, there was no media. The fourth inning, media timeout has hit here at Scheib Park. No, none of that. Back after this on the Joe Beaver Show.
I agree.
Something else that works. The market correcting self line by Mike was a very good one, and you said you got a text along those lines.
CVB writes in and says markets correct by killing off lesser competitors.
Well,
that's what I was thinking while Dave was talking, or Mike was talking. I was thinking, how will it correct?
Yeah,
it'll eliminate most schools.
The Beavers would thus have to find a way to separate and make themselves distinctive in the way they go about their business and just say, look, almost like the academies are doing. But that's not the world you're in.
No, but CBB goes on to say, and I agree with this. It's sarcastic, but it's true. So much for the association that was formed to promote a more level field in dozens of different sports for hundreds of diverse schools.
Right, with scholarship limits and that type
scholarship of thing. Scholarship and Title IX, all of that is out the window. Now it's all just about, who can make
the
biggest buck? Mm-hmm. Hello, gentlemen. This is Joe in Hermiston. What are your thoughts on the Beaver baseball signings yesterday? I saw one.
I don't know.
And
Joe,
I don't know.
Joe, that's great. It's important stuff. We'll perhaps explore it when we get a chance.
Yeah, I don't.
Immersed in football and basketball right now and these daily shows and the conversations we have, that's important. It's the lifeblood and vital. And that's where the really important part of it to me is how Mitch and the staff and so on can keep recruiting at a high level in the age we're in with no conference affiliation per se, going independent for a couple of years, and who knows thereafter.
Maybe next week we can get one of them on to talk about these guys and recruiting now in this era that they're in of independence. And are they going to stay independent?
These are good questions. Yeah. We have open phones when we return, and then Ann Schatz at 12:30 to talk of Tanya and men's and women's basketball and her time at Creighton growing up in Omaha and more. And Shots at 12:30, but we'd love to get your calls and texts, Nick, reacting to everything on The Joe Beaver Show.
Hello.
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 Let's hear a story.
Someone somewhere a long time ago made a suggestion to a kid in L.O.
You ought to go on the radio.
But everybody knows.
Takes two to make a radio program.
Down south, the Row River kid wasn't so sure, and still isn't.
I'm just a country boy. I ain't even sure I want to stay in this dang old radio business.
Ah, but stay they both did, and met up in the Mid-Valley 20 years ago. With a compulsion to tell them about the Beavers in Corvallis and beyond.
Tell them in Eugene, Albany, Salem, tell them!
And in Jervis and Amity and Shedd and Lewisburg. Ah, but not just for today.
Five of those radio programs every week. Have you a radio program coming in right now?
Yes, but a reminder.
Life's short. Calm down. Life's short.
Yes, call now, because The Joe Beaver Show is on the air on 1240 Joe Radio.
And again, Bruce's message is true. Life is short. Call now, and Doug already has in Salem. Thank you, Doug. Into the second hour we go on this Thursday afternoon. That was a high-energy first hour.
I'm tired.
I know. I made good calls from Dave and Spencer and Mike, and challenging sort of calls in their own way, and calls that that I feel like, and even the conversation with Jordan, just continue to sort of underscore the world we live in and the world we're in, and trying to figure things out as we go.
It's funny, we were doing that during the break, and Doug wants to talk about that very thing.
Yeah, so let's go to Doug.
So it's a conversation that really won't end for a lot of years.
No, it won't. And when Rob Mullen says we need $20 million, which Mullen said on John Canzano's show, which I didn't hear any of yesterday, if that's true, I think Jordan clarified it by saying that $20 million piece, I believe, is the number that presidents and ADs are thinking about in terms of the revenue sharing piece, comes in at about that.
Yeah.
So that everybody's going to need, in theory, that kind of number. And I don't think Rob was saying begging for another $20 million as much as declaring that that's what we're going to need to come up with in that one part of the world we're living in. I may be wrong about that too, but I think that's what Mullins, if he did say something to that effect with Canzano, Jordan thought that's what Rob was talking about.
Yeah.
But all of it, anytime I start hearing these types of figures thrown around, sustainability, yes, but also just viability for the Beavers and Oregon State in a smaller market world, less revenue, the media deal, however attractive it may be, and the rights deal, and parsing maybe basketball from, I mean, creating a dual sort of deal for one, you know, for basketball and football to maximize the revenue opportunities. That it's all shrewd and smart, and the media deal may end up coming in at a decent number, but it's going to still be a lesser number than it was in the old Power Five Pac-12 days in the media rights money. Everything feels less than it used to be when more money than ever is required.
Yeah.
So I get nervous about required to be viable, required to retain players, required to attract players. It's a difficult subject for me and for all of us right now.
When Mike says there will never be a cap, okay, technically, lawfully, that's probably
based on what the courts have said.
Probably true.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that things will go on and be the way they are. And some kid gets $10.5 million for 4 years to play quarterback.
Is that a rumor out there on a particular figure?
Yeah, Michigan is going after this five-star kid who's going to LSU and offering $10.5 million.
And that, what, reportedly offering? Or they're just saying, no, they said we're offering $10.5 million.
Yeah, on Three Sports has it, and it was a tweet this morning.
And
that
then
I
Dylan
noticed.
Raiola, the quarterback in Nebraska, is somehow being poached. I read he got off to a 5-1 start. He's a big time guy. And an article I read said, "Oh, the poaching's begun."
Is he leaving?
He's not saying he's leaving, But the poaching's already beginning, so the offers are already multiplying.
So if you're a CEO, if you're a head coach of a program like a Trent Bray, you have to deal now with money and how to get more of it and who to give it to and how much to give it to. Then you have to deal with the portal of the kids being able to leave if they don't play or whatever. And then you have to deal with all the other stuff that goes along with being a head coach.
Tony Bennett said, no, no more. He struck the board and cried, no more. Whether he will
Tony
or not.
Bennett just said, and
yeah, I mean, he's not alone.
I think Nick Saban did the same thing and other coaches.
Let's go to Doug on the Downward Dog phone line. If you have any thoughts about all of this, any of this, some of this, feel free. 497-5356. Doug, good afternoon.
Well, thank you. I'd like to throw out three numbers for you guys. The first number is 23. The second number is 200. And the last number is 1 billion. We've already talked about the 23 million nil budget that is being paid out apparently this football season down in Eugene for the Ducks, which is quite a lot of money. The second number is 200, and that number is a number I got from a fairly informed Beaver booster buddy of mine here in Salem. And that figure is what apparently the Ducks are planning. They're budgeting in the future $200 million for nil money in the future. I don't know what the time limit of that is, but, you know, that's money they think they can get, you know. And so that's kind of what we're up against. And then the last number is $1 billion, which is kind of a big number. I read an article on the Internet, and I believe everything I read on the Internet, you know, of course. And there was an article, and they had a list of the top 10 football, you know, basically athletic programs in the country. And so I started reading that article, and I noticed that it has some pretty big schools there. I'm just throwing out the first numbers here. Kind of like they had Southern Cal at maybe 5, and they had them at maybe $600 million in asset value, what they called asset value, how much their football programs are worth and their whole athletic departments are worth. So then I keep going down the list, and then I see LSU, a big number, but Alabama, $700 million. After a while, I noticed that I haven't come across Oregon yet. And then I finally get the number one team in the country, and apparently in the asset value of the Ducks is about $930 million, was almost $1 billion, which is kind of an amazing number. But that's what we're going up against down in little Eugene.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Doug, your research, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. But I always, whenever you share some of these findings and some of these thoughts of yours about things like this, you'll talk sometimes about so-and-so, Oregon got this many 5 stars and we've got, you know, we don't have any 4 stars. You say these things, and here's what I wonder, Doug, and even in giving those numbers, all three of those were about the school down the road. You are the consummate Beaver fan. You love the Beavers. You travel, you support, you come to as many games as you possibly can and have so forever. So I guess my question to you, what do you do with that information? How do you think about it? Are you just sharing it with us just to say this is what we're up against, or we better do that too, or I know we can't compete with this because, you know, that's just out of our league? What is it that motivates you to find these sorts of numbers out, and then how do you react to them as a Beaver fan when you see those numbers, and how do you think we in the administration and everybody should react to those kinds of numbers?
Well, just the world we're in, we're a fairly small state, and here we're in the same state with the number one team in football right now. Mm-hmm. I have an assignment for you guys, since you're a Joe Beaver show and everything. I know it's a touchy thing to get you involved in. Could you try to find out what our nil budget for football is this year?
Yes, we can try and see if we can find out. But again, Doug, you didn't really answer my question. I guess I'm just asking, what does it mean for you, before we get on the homework assignment you've given us, when you do call to make these comparisons, sort of why? I mean, What motivates you? Does it make you depressed? And if so, why would you do it? Or do you just want to be a realist about the world we're in, or what?
Well, I have a cousin, and he's a complete, he lives in Portland area, and he's probably a number one fan, I guess. He has season tickets, and he goes to the games with his son, and they're in a fantastic world down there. I mean, they have, you know, 80,000 people, I guess, go to watch their number one football team, and life is fabulous for them. And that we've had kind of bad five, you know, games. We're lucky we won the game against Colorado State. We're two touchdown favorites, and we're kind of lucky we won that one because they're not a very deep team, and we finally just had more talent than they had at the end. So we're lucky to get that one. And now, of course, we got four, you know, the other games, and mm-hmm. the Cal game is just
yes.
awful. You know,
yes.
Anyway, it's just the world we're in. You know, it's just and especially at this point in the season. You know,
right? Okay,
and it is an
observation. I talk late Saturday. You know, with a fella, two fellas, and they were, you know, they have seven tickets. You know, to the Beaver games. They're not too happy, but they're hanging in there. We're going to be, re-up their tickets next year. But, you know, just these are tough days to be a Beaver fan right now.
Well,
have to compare them to Eugene. I mean, they're just they're on a huge roll, and they got Uncle Phil. I mean, he's in his 80s, but he has $80 billion. You know, he's a wealthy guy, you know. And they're just
yes.
they can –
Yes.
I remember years ago, they had a friend, acquaintance, very wide acquaintance, Harold Taylor. I don't know if you remember
Harold Taylor was. I like Harold. I knew Harold Taylor and liked Harold Taylor a good deal, liked him a lot. Yes. What about it, Doug?
Yeah, he donated $1 million to the Duck program way back in probably 1980s.
Yeah.
And he's a fantastic person. I really liked him.
Yes, he was a good man.
But he's the first person to donate around $1 million back
mm-hmm.
then. At that time, you know, Oregon State were about to equal. You know, we had the famous toilet bowl that I endured, you know. And so,
sure.
But it shows how the two programs have kind of gone their two separate ways, you know. You got the founder of Nike is pumping tons of money into the
yep.
the Ducks and everything. And we're just, you know.
Well,
we're surviving now. We got a league going, which is a lot better than we were, you know, a year ago, you know. So, it's just the world we're in, you know,
mm-hmm.
the reality of it. Okay.
Doug, and thank you for your support, though, of the Beavs through all the years. We need to take a quick break. We'll come.
It's going to be a long one.
Oh, so it won't be that quick.
Too long.
I guess
ones
there is
in
something.
This,
nothing,
in
just
this
a little pinprick, nothing to fret about. Now we need all of your. I guess there is something to fret about. One of my favorite lines in the original Pirates. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Any shots at 12:30, open phones and texts. Any reaction to Doug laying out those numbers and how do they affect you? He's the ultimate Beaver fan. He ain't going anywhere. He'll keep buying tickets and keep supporting. But he does fixate because he's in a world where people are happy down there. So they're real happy down there. Okay, well, what do you think?
I guess
what are we supposed to do about it?
I guess his voice sounds like he's about to make a point. And then it ends.
Well,
and I think basically what it is it's just an observation.
Yeah, it's just saying, hey, this is kind of where it is. Okay, and Doug, thank you. It's good research.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong to ask about us trying to find out what our
But if I find
out what that figure is and it's nothing near 200 million,
yeah, right.
What do you want me to say? Well, I've got 11 going here. I mean, I don't know. What do you want me to do? Well, let's take a break. That's what we'll do on the Joe Beaver Show. The Joe Beaver Show, Mike Parker with John Warren, 497-5356. The Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line. Some of you may say, Mike, you're not very I love Doug. Doug is one of our favorite people ever and callers and a true Beaver fan. But he does spend time in the world where he's kind of in that comparing our situation to someone else's. Now, you know, St. Paul said 2,000 years ago that comparisons, he used a different word, but are invidious, and he doesn't recommend the whole comparing of yourselves with others. It doesn't do you a whole lot of good in the overall scheme of things, and I trust St. Paul on
that's
that
pretty
one.
Wise,
yeah,
because it happens.
But he's also trying to say, but so he's bringing it up to say, we're just trying to lay, this is the world, we're 40 miles, we're in the same universe in theory, but that's the world we're in. Yeah, and I, so yeah. Doug, thank you for the research and the work. I'm not sure how to react to it. What do you got on the
pencil?
Well,
as we go to
we'll
Dave,
go to Dave and just
Jeff out. Wrote in basically yeah. said that we were talking earlier yeah. about quarterbacks and $10.5 million. He says reportedly Mateer at Washington State was being offered from a different school. Seven figures.
What, like now? Or what's his eligibility status? Has he got another year? I don't even know the situation, but he chose to stay in Pullman even though he got seven. Is that an offer of seven? Was that the idea? Let's go to Dave on the Downward Dog phone line. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon. You know, I can't help it. I listen to Doug, and I'm not saying he's, you know, wrong by any means. It's worse that they're, you know, closer to home and they're our rival, right? If they weren't, I don't know that half of these things would be even such a big deal. If they weren't having that success and they weren't our, you know, mm-hmm. bitter rival at that point.
Right.
You know, people calling for coordinators' jobs and this and that, you know, like, interesting, you know, thing that Mike Riley said yesterday was, you know, a team's got to have an identity. And you know, most teams that do, they've got that one play they can go to, whether it's, you know, student body,
right,
student base
right.
sweep. I think one time for us, you know, under Riley, it was probably the fly sweep. Is that right?
Well,
that
it became one, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you had that play you could go to. Mm-hmm. You know, just a couple of years ago, we had, you know, jackhammer on
yes.
know, fourth and short, third and short.
Yes.
You know, and what happens is coaches don't make that happen. They teach those plays, and they put those players in a position to go out there and the players have to go out there and do that and create their own identity in that, right?
Right.
Whether it was the offensive line that blocked better for Coletto, mm-hmm. or Coletto just had a knack for finding the slots, or a combination of both, whatever it was, you know, there's probably times that early on that, you know, he was a young guy that those plays didn't pop for him. The way they started to when he became a junior and senior.
Yeah.
You know, and so when we look at a bunch of young guys, a bunch of guys that have never played on the field together, it takes time to get that, you know, Mahomes-Kelsey mm-hmm. vibe going on,
mm-hmm.
Tom Brady-Gronkowski, you know, where you've got that go-to play and those guys connecting. You know, it really does that happen in the first year. That you put players together in the same,
right?
You know,
right.
So I don't fault offensive in that. I think that they've come up with some plays that could have actually really been really good plays, and players, you know, just last week the touchdown should have been a touchdown, could have been, you know, Reddick turned right instead of goes left, mm-hmm. and the ball's picked off.
Right.
That's, you know, whether that's a receiver that made the wrong mm-hmm. read or understood the hoop, you know.
Yeah. Dave.
Had a glitch at that moment, whatever it is. I'm just saying, you know, we got to relax. We've just put these guys together. Most of these guys, you know, haven't even been playing together for 2 months.
That's
spring practice, right?
That's right. And a lot weren't available then either. That's a good point, Dave.
The talent.
Yeah.
I think we've got some great talent there. Some guys got to grow up. They got to learn.
Yep.
They got to learn how to play together. They got to learn how to win together. They got to learn how to create their own identity as a team. That's not on them.
Yeah.
Players have to dig deep and create that own identity.
Dave, thank you. Well said. And piggybacking a bit on what Coach Riley did indeed talk about yesterday, let's go to Kelly on the Downward Dog phone line. Good afternoon, Kelly.
Thanks for your time, Mike. You know what? Listening to all these people, you know what? I think we're too worried about the money. We will never be the Ducks. I don't want to be the Ducks. I want to be a Beaver, you know? But, you know, I remember, and I'm 70 years old, so I've been following the Beavers for a long time. We recruit to succeed. We didn't play these players. We brought them in. We gave them good, you know, put them in the weight room, give them nutrition, give them good coaching, and we pick a 2-3 star, and it 4, 5, 6 years later, they're playing in the NFL.
Right, right.
And I think it can still happen that way.
Well,
as far as just being like Oregon, it ain't never going to happen.
Kelly, you make
good... It'd be nice eventually if we could get on the same playing field and at least compete with them.
You know, Kelly, you make great points. And Oregon State has been, to me, an incredibly successful program of development, such as you've talked about.
And you know what? We're blessed, Mike, because you called all those games.
Well, and Kelly, we've seen it, but the model, the business model, how to do business has changed. Now, because we've seen even in our recent time together, the last several years, under the radar recruits that the staff, Jonathan's staff before, of which Trent and others were part of, but I mean, you find players that maybe were under recruited and you find them because you have a good eye for talent. You bring them in, you coach them up, you develop them, you coach them up. And in the world we're in now, somebody dangles the offer to come play for this amount of money. I can't blame. I mean, these are young men who have a chance to make a bunch of money that pro football they may never make it to that level. They're getting a chance to get paid at this level, at a high level. I don't fault the players. I mean, but it's a world that makes it very difficult for the Beavers and Cougs and others to be a developmental program for other programs.
You know what, one thing I love about Oregon State is look at coaches, our basketball coaches. I mean, they're moving forward. I'm excited. Had to go to Europe and get six or seven players, but you have to do what you have to do.
That's right. I know. Hey, Kelly, we're out of time. We've got running and shots coming up next. Thank you for the call, sir. Again, we'll get into some open phones and texts, and John, you and TJ will have it tomorrow. Busy show tomorrow to maybe pick up on some of these themes and let you figure it out and slog it out and hammer it out, because I don't quite...
I figured out one fix.
I don't quite know what to do. What do you got?
Well, keep it now. I mean, it's a first step, let's say. Keep it now the way it is, but try and bring back sitting out a year after transfer.
Well, yeah. I mean, there may be some guardrail types of things, but again, as Mike pointed out, I mean, everything, and this is maybe a topic for Alan Thayer again soon, where it's all going and the climate.
Is that illegal to do?
Well, I think it may be difficult to restrict player movement. That's
another lawsuit?
I have a chance. I'm a free agent, so to speak. I mean, I know they're not employees and thus not
Kurt
unionized
Flood.
And all of that, but I mean.
You're right.
I'm not sure that they're going to be able to put that genie back in and say, okay, now you got to sit out a year like you used to, when everything's moved in the opposite direction of that.
Well, as CVB said, and I agree with it 100%, as the market corrects, it will correct to about five teams playing each other.
Well, and that's what Doc Fink, our good friend Steve Fink, was saying a long time ago. This whole thing is moving in that direction. He was saying that back in 17 and 18, that we're going to be down. He was looking ahead to super type teams and conferences that can compete in that world. That apparently,
and maybe
in,
everyone else
does something else,
goes back to the way it always
it
used
could
to be.
It could be. The market may correct itself into that world, and we just keep kind of finding our own way and then still left standing in a world that is a little more familiar. Who knows? We'll see. And shots next on the Joe Beaver Show.
We're not the only ones.
Yeah, good. Running Ann, that was a good name. I don't know if that was an Ed Whalen. It might have been Ed Whalen. Big Daddy himself, she worked with. I don't know. We'll find out. She may still run. I know a big-time runner, running Ann Schatz. I always reverse that to Ann, don't go running to him. You know, an old Tommy Overstreet country music song from the 70s. But running Ann Schatz, born in Omaha, went to Creighton, played two sports at Creighton, a journalism major at Creighton, the first woman sportscaster ever in the Omaha market, was also the first female sportscaster in the Portland market. So many things in her fascinating life story. Some 40 years now into the business. It's always a pleasure to welcome a good friend over the years into this show.
And my wife Kim's favorite announcer.
Okay, well, here we
She's
go.
She's always asking. She wants to meet you.
Well, let's make it happen, Johnny. You can make that happen. Ann Schatz joins us. Ann, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, I'm great. A couple of housekeeping.
Yes.
I can't even thank you enough for saying a friend to the show, a friend to us. That's all that matters to me. Number two, John, we will make that happen with Kim. That's on you, pal. So let's get that done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's so many things we could talk to you about, and I want to make sure we don't lose the business at hand first before I talk a little bit about a story that we both covered 30 years ago in Portland that you got the original scoop on. I kind of wanted to, I know we've touched on it before, but I look forward to you kind of filling in some details on that. But let's start with what you just, I just saw you and Mary Murphy Tuesday calling both ends of a Hoops doubleheader, two Big Beaver wins. What are your overall impressions of both of those games?
Well, let's start with the women since they had the first game of the double dip. It's no secret that Coach Ruick, Scotty Ruick, has quite a challenge in front of him. We often talk about what a great coach he is, but I think what gets lost sometimes is what a great teacher he is. And this is going to be a teaching challenge. Maybe you can go back to his first year with Oregon State when the program was in the ashes. This program is not in the ashes, but what I mean is that's when he had, you know, open tryouts. People my age were coming to the gym, for God's sake. And he quickly turned that program into what we know of it, you know, being now. And that's not going to change, but folks have to understand this year is going to be, I'm not going to say difficult, I just think it's going to be challenging. And what Ruick loves as much as anything else is a challenge. And boy, he's got one. I think he's got good pieces. I think the veterans that came back are going to be relied on heavily and will be dependable. And it's going to be interesting to see what the new faces can do because Scotty's system is complex. It, you know, his playbook is deep. It's massive. He'll probably keep things simple this year for as the new kids integrate, the new players integrate into a system. But I it's going to be interesting, guys, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that, woe is me. It's just going to be interesting.
Right.
Well, it all everything starts with defense. So could he start there and then build from it? Because they showed some really good offensive prowess in that game, especially Sela Heidi, which we'd never seen that before. But really, doesn't it just start with the defense?
Well, it usually does with Oregon State, yes. But I think, you know, it was really weird to see them give up 12 or 13 triples against Colorado State. That hasn't happened in a couple of years, okay? I mean, that just does not happen.
Yeah.
Because Scott hangs his hat on defense, it's going to take a while for the defense that we're used to seeing, with all due respect to Northwest Nazarene, it's going to take a while for the defense to be where Scott would like it to be. Saying that, the women that need to shine offensively have to do it now. Heidi, Reese, Rott, Schuler, they have got good games darn near every time out.
Yeah. And Schatz joining us on the men's side. And I realize you talk about Northwest Nazarene and the Western Oregon, and they are 3-0. They've won all three games pretty handily. What did you make of what you saw on the men's side Tuesday night?
Boys, what I'd like to tell Beaver Nation is to get out and see this team. I think Wayne has got something really, really special going. If they can stay healthy, now both of these teams parallel each other, as you know, both programs losing a ton to the transfer portal. And obviously then both teams have to go out to the transfer portal to try and quote unquote get well. The men, I think, have hit the mother load with a couple of guys who have come in. And, you know, the thing I love about Coach Tinkle is, and he'll emphasize this over and over, he's not a transactional coach. He's a relational coach. And that is old school, as old as it gets. Because everything it seems in this world right now is transactional, and that ain't how Wayne rolls. And the bunch that he has brought in, some of the names I can pronounce, some I can't. Mike, you got to help me here.
Okay.
LT is killing me.
Lelavicius. LT. Yeah, Lataris Lelavicius.
Lelavicius?
Lelavicius.
Well, that kid from Lithuania is special. It's going to take a little bit.
Yes.
But you look at guys like Parsifala coming in. DeMarco Minor coming in. I think Logie's got the potential.
Yes.
And then you complement them with some of the returners, led by a rejuvenated Michael Ratai and a Nate Kings, who's finally healthy. Guys, I'm telling you, they are no more the seventh place team in the WCC than they are the last. They are going to be, if they stay healthy, they will be a top four or five team. There's no doubt in my mind, and that is a good basketball conference.
Yes.
Yeah, we're balancing right now, and I've got the call tomorrow night. Mike's out of town. We're balancing this idea of who you're playing versus the victories. And a lot of fan base, many in our listening audience, will text in and say, well, it's only dot, dot, dot. But Cal State Fullerton's 0-3. I think there will be another big win tomorrow night. But you do what you're supposed to do, and that's what they've done. And haven't we seen, Ann, in previous years, teams that did not blow out these teams? And so that's where we are. What more can they do, right?
I'm totally with you. I don't want this talking out of both sides of your mouth stuff. Because if they don't win by 30, then folks are coming out of the woodwork saying, what's wrong with these guys? I just don't want to hear it. What I know is they followed a game plan which allowed a ton of bodies to play the other night against Western Oregon, and they never lost focus. They never looked up at the scoreboard. They just went like hell. And I think that's a great sign. There's no black hole on that team, guys. There is no black hole on that team. And I think that is going to bode well. So what I'll counter with is, did anybody expect Oregon State to blow out Weber State the way they did?
No, because Weber State's good and picked second in that good league.
There it is.
Yeah.
So all I know is Wayne's guys have taken care of business. And I mean, beat who you're supposed to, okay. But then you take Weber State to the woodshed, and that's impressive. Mm-hmm. And all I know is the game coming up is going to, if it goes as it should, and Oregon State continues to keep its head down and play with that focus and a lot of joy, then I think that Oregon game is going to be mighty interesting.
Yeah, and we'll talk when we're apparently a ticket special going on that we've just been apprised of. We'll talk about that to create a tremendous atmosphere next Thursday night at Gill Coliseum. A few more minutes with Ann Schatz. And before we leave off basketball, and thank you for your thoughts about both the men's and women's programs, we want to talk about both the men's and women's on the soccer side here in a minute to close. But, Ann, one last thing on, you said Wayne is not transactional, he's more relational, but does not every coach in some respects, in the day and age we're in, have to be transactional to some extent? I mean, what do you make of the world, Scott and Wayne and everybody, you know, in smaller markets, maybe with less stuff, quote unquote, to work with than a lot of the big brands may have? How do the Beavs, Cougs, and others in the new world we're in continue to be viable and compete and be transactional where you've got to be?
Well, you bring up a good point, Mike. And I think a guy like Wayne or Scott, I think those guys would be the first to say yes when it comes to, you know, you got to recruit who you have.
Right.
Now you got to go out and recruit the guys that and women that are already wearing your gear. It's nuts. Anywho, when Wayne says that, I think what he means more than anything else is yes, he has got to understand the portal as well as anybody, and maybe even more so because of the factors that you just bring in, Mike. Scott, same deal. I think when Wayne talks about that, it is when he is talking to a human being, one of his players, or interacting with his guys, that he is very, very aware of that human relationship with his players. And that's what I mean by old school.
Yeah, I got you. And it's not just you're worth this amount to me because of your skill set and we're going to pay.
That's correct.
We'll pay you accordingly. No, I appreciate the distinction, certainly. And on soccer, Caroline Kelly announced as the permanent head coach. What kind of job, Ann? You saw a lot of the season and the arc of the season.
Yep.
We'll get to the men in a moment. But what a great job Coach Kelly did, huh?
Unbelievable. So she gets handed the interim title mid-July. And there were a few incoming freshmen that decided to decommit. which they had the right to do when the coaching change was announced. So, and then immediately three major injuries to major players. So Caroline is dealing with some decommits, major injuries. So now she's got a lean roster and they're trying to figure out the kids are trying to figure out her brand new system. They look pedestrian and marginally okay up until that Wyoming game on the road. They win in the last couple of minutes and everything switched. Everything changed. And she had them cohesive. She had them collected. And more than anything else, they saw what it took, saw what it felt like to win, what it took to win, and it just kept going. And when they beat Santa Clara, with that goal late in the match, I'm getting the chills thinking about it. Right then, you say, she doesn't get that interim tag tossed. There's something wrong here.
Yeah.
Because she's in the running as WCC Coach of the Year at that moment.
Yeah.
She would have been one of the favorites. The way things played out, because their schedule was so brutal, they lose the last couple of games. Okay. But what she did in conference play in a good WCC soccer conference was unbelievable. And she, you know, the best thing in the world is now she's the head coach. Heck with the coach of the year. She wanted that head coach, and she's got that title.
Yeah. Hey, on the men's side, Ann, thank you for your time and a busy schedule. But what about that? What Coach Boss did, what Greg Dalby and inheriting it is doing and continuing to do, your thoughts about what you've seen from the men and what's ahead?
Just unbelievable. And they're still in it, guys. They can still win the WCC title. They need some help, and they need to win at Merlot Field in Portland. No easy task. No easy task. But what Greg has done in his second year is not surprising, because he set his expectations, our expectations, so high. I think they are absolutely on a roll, exactly where they were last year at this time. Just remember this, boys. Regardless of what happens against Portland, they're going to the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're hoping to get a first-round bye and then to host. Mm-hmm. Just remember last year, they were unranked going into the NCAA tournament. Unranked. And they boat raced everybody until the College Cup semifinals, ended up being ranked number 4. Mm-hmm. They've got the tools to do that this year.
That's great.
That was going to be my question. Did you expect them to get in last year or get that far? And do they have the same kind of talent to do it again?
Yes.
Okay.
I expected them to do that last year. Their talent was sublime last year. It was special last year, and he had really good guys coming off the bench. This year, I am a little surprised that they just haven't missed a beat, you guys. They have all the tools. You know, and you know how it is. You got to catch lightning in a bottle in a short period of time. This is the time you want to get stuff bottled up with the lightning. They have the tools and the pieces to do it, and he's a fabulous coach.
And final thing, and thank you for touching on all of these matters. You talk about it in every post I see from you, every interview that you do. You're in the time of your life doing all of these play-by-play assignments and so on. When I first met you in the Portland market over 30 years ago, it was a joy to know you then and to see you then. Was it Big Daddy, Ed Whalen, that gave you a run in, Ann, by the way?
Hell yes.
Okay.
Yep. And I asked him, please don't call me that. And I should never have said that, because he looked at me and said, oh,
I got you.
That's going to stick.
Yeah.
Yep. I got you. And yeah, that was Ed.
Okay.
And I should have just kept quiet. He probably would have forgotten. But the minute I said, oh God, Ed, don't do that.
Well,
it was done. The ship had sailed.
In those days, though, running air, Ann Schatz, our guest, we all, everybody, the whole world did, covered the Tonya Harding story. And an interesting movie, and this is kind of what I'm asking you about. I, Tonya's a good movie, and Margot Robbie and the other actresses in it did an amazing job. I'm curious what your thoughts were about that film in terms of the depiction of the tale. But I also, before you answer that, you were the first to get a one-on-one with Tonya through that whole maelstrom. How did you do it?
Well, luck would have it, guys. One day I'm sitting at my desk at Coin TV, and somebody hands me a manila folder with my name on it. And I open it, and it is a legal-sized piece of paper bunch of really it was a very odd letter that never named. At the top, of the letter, there were a series of six or seven names, each name getting a number. Number one, Tanya. Number two, whatever. Three, four, five, six. And then in the body of the letter, names were never referenced, just numbers. So on Saturday afternoon, number one and number three and number seven met number eight at his house to go over. So it was very bizarre. But you start connecting the dots, and it implicates Tanya, her husband, Jeff Galluli, and his henchmen, if you will. It was very bizarre and really interesting. And so I called her and said, I've got a document I think you would want to see. She said, will you text it to me? I said, nope, I won't. But what I will do is you can come down to the station, do an interview with me, and I'll let you take a look at it. But we're doing the interview first.
Nice.
Yep. So that's how it all happened.
Great journalism. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, that's smart.
And so there's so much more we could unpack on that from that point forward. But, and all these years later, the really entertaining, well-acted film comes out, I, Tanya, that everybody that I know has seen and kind of liked it and become then intrigued again and asking, like, my daughter's, Dad, were you around for the, yeah, I saw, I was there. So what did you think, Anne, of the film itself as a depiction of that whole story?
You know, I really liked it because I thought the acting was good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Hollywood's going to take the liberties they want to take. And with that, the story was so bizarre from the very beginning that, you know, you kind of think to yourself, well, yeah, why not go down that road? that could have happened. I mean, the whole thing was, you can't write the script, and yet they did a pretty good job of I think, doing as you would say, Mike, depicting it with some accuracy. And enough accuracy from my vantage point that it told a pretty good tale, a tale that nobody could have made up, a tale that still defies logic, that still you shake your head and go, how in the world will that transpire? And I thought that movie captured it pretty well.
Were you consulted at all? Stephen Rogers wrote the screenplay. Were you ever at any point, were archives sought out at COIN? Were you involved in the process at all?
No. Gosh darn it. How insulting. I'm kidding, of course. I was not.
Okay.
Which is A-okay. I think they had enough information and enough to go with to go where they wanted to go.
Have you had... go ahead, Ann.
It was fun. It was a fun movie.
Have you stayed in touch with Tanya at all in the ensuing years?
I have not. Okay. And you know what, Mike? I kind of regret that. Folks can judge me and her all they want. It matters not to me because I have a large affection, a deep and genuine affection for her. if I had children, I would certainly tell them never to lie, cheat, or steal.
Yeah.
I disagree with a lot of, you know, choices have consequences, without a doubt. And yet, there's a heartfelt space I have for her because of what she went through as a little girl, all the way up through some really bad choices along the way in terms of who she got involved with. Not coaches, but with men and et cetera, and that kind of thing.
Right.
I got a soft spot for her, guys. I do.
That's totally understandable, especially when you know the story, and we do here in this corner of the country, about the youth and things that went on much long before, you know, the crimes or whatever.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It was she went through some brutal times, guys.
Right.
That was not glamorized. That was not sensationalized. It broke my heart.
Yeah. And I do think in that part of it too, the film, I thought, and maybe because of the sensitivity of a good actress like Margot, and then I can't remember the name of the Allison somebody that played Tanya's mother was excellent in it too. What is it?
Janie was great.
Yeah,
Janie
she was great.
As Tanya's mom.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought that element that you're talking about of some pathos, of some human empathy for her story and her situation in life, I thought the film got some of that too, and they got it, I thought.
I totally agree, Mike, and I think that is a really important piece to this whole journey. Mm-hmm. And if you take that out, you're doing a disservice to the journey and to Tanya. You think about, go with it however you want to, in terms of the decision she made with the Nancy Kerrigan situation. Have at it. But you cannot leave out her beginnings, and her challenges, and what she went through. You just can't.
Yeah. Hey, Ann, what's next for you? When will we see you again, as the 3 degrees would sing, in terms of your next Oregon State assignment?
Well, I'm trying to figure that out.
okay.
Because I'm going to go to L.A. for a quick Big Ten game, Arkansas at UCLA women.
Okay. Okay.
So, well, you know, the neat thing is, though, I get to see Tamia Gardner.
Yes, yes.
And that makes me very, very happy.
Good.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
When you're in this new day and age of ESPN Plus and stuff, and the Pac-12 being gone, and all you guys that are had done Pac-12 games, and we love all of you, are the producers and the people who hire you, do they all know each other? Because there are more than one choice now. You can be on one station or one network, and then another one on a different game.
Well, the wonderful thing about Pac-2 Enterprises, which is making sure that Washington State and Oregon State have all of their events on ESPN Plus covered in professional fashion. I'm working with some of the best producers in the business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with easily some of the best analysts in the business. I'm working with easily some of the best crews, photographers, audio people in the business. So it feels to me like I'm the luckiest. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I stumbled into this, but being on your campus, and then I'll get to go to Pullman a few times too, but getting to do these events, I'm the most grateful, fortunate play-by-play person on the planet.
Hey, Ann, it's great to talk to you. Look forward to when our paths do cross again. Have a great trip to Los Angeles. Thank you for making time for us here on the Joe Beaver Show.
Always. I love you guys. And please, when you have a gap, call me back again. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Again.
Thanks, Ann. Thank you, Ann. Well, we're heading to the top of the hour, correct?
Minute,
on the fan?
Minute.
Okay. Thank you. I love Ann Schott.
I know. She's just positive. She's such a positive spirit.
She had a little Bill Walton spirit there. The luckiest, you know.
Yeah.
It's unimaginable, a basketball season without Bill.
When that comes up, I just like, I forgot about it.
But hearing her talk about, I'm the luckiest play-by-play person and all of that. What a great soul and spirit. Hey, Johnny, you and TJ, have a good time. Settle, fix, and solve everything.
We have Nate Pine,
the director of athletics at Air Force, who worked for 6 years in this market and helped raise money to raise research and expand Beaver Nation, the old new side.
He'll join us tomorrow at 11:30, and then at 12:30, Chris Pendleton.
Big meet coming with his alma mater.
Oklahoma State, that's right. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show.
And you've got basketball tomorrow.
Tomorrow night. I've got the morning show, then run over to campus, do two interviews, then come back and host the Joe Beaver Show.
Go do another interview.
Back to campus to do another interview, and then go home for maybe a half hour, and then go back to the
game. And call the game after getting up at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
You need to play either the Jim Reeves and Music Friday, Jim Reeves, or Eddie Arnold's version of Welcome to My World. That is your world, and thank you for welcoming us into it. Thanks, everybody. Johnny and TJ, we'll see you tomorrow.